Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is the Hip Hop Saved My Life podcast. Thank you for listening to the podcast. Hope you enjoy the podcast. Now sit back, because it's time for the podcast.
Hello, welcome to Hip Hop Saved My Life. Rematch, how are you?
I'm good, how are you doing?
I'm really good, mate. Good.
Good to be back.
Yeah, it's good to be back. I've ordered a new coffee machine.
Oh, have you?
Yeah.
What can you say?
I don't know what it is. I just looked on the reviews and like that's the best one.
Yeah.
So it's coming today. So I'm really like buzzing about it. Well, it's I will be buzzing after I get six espressos down my neck, mate. Fucking smashing life. What about you?
I've got one as well.
You've got one?
I got given one for Christmas.
What have you got?
An espresso one.
Right.
With those little capsules.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it just makes you drink more coffee.
Yeah, but that's good, isn't it?
Is it?
I think so.
Hmm.
But the only... Environmentally, it's shit, isn't it? Because every time you have a coffee, then you've got this fucking pod.
Yeah.
I mean, I looked at...
Oh, are they not biodegradable, the
well,
pods?
There's a recycling service that you can phone up, and then they'll say to you where to send it to. But I think...
Who does that?
Yeah. Who the fuck does that? But it's good to know that that's there if I did choose to give a shit about the planet.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Every little thing counts, doesn't it?
It's all a myth anyway, isn't it? Environmental. That's the one thing I agree with Trump on.
Yeah, me too.
I just think it's bullshit. That.
Spread that throughout the podcast.
I just think let the earth have its own natural life.
Mm.
I mean, you know...
We do sort of need to stop and start it all again anyway. So.
We're not going to be able to reverse it. Mm. Sorry, we're not going to be able to reverse it. No, people are too fucking lazy. It's not going to happen. All everybody that thinks that... We're going to change and reinvent the way we do things. We're not, mate. So just accept the apocalypse as it arrives. Anyway.
Can't wait.
This is the bit where we introduce our guest.
Well, listen, we are joined by DJ Royalty today.
Good DJ name, that.
DJ Royalty, that would be a good DJ name. But it isn't DJ Royalty we're joined by. It's MK. MK, how
What's
are
happening?
You?
I'm good.
Thanks for coming on, man.
No,
appreciate
pleasure,
it.
Man.
Yeah, thanks, man. I used to buy your mixtapes, loads of them.
Wow.
Now, I'll tell you how I got to start buying them. Mm. There was a number in Hip Hop Connection.
That's right.
Amazing.
And there was a guy, I can't remember the guy's name, but I'll tell you, I used to buy loads of mixtapes from him, and I buy all of yours. Mm. I remember one day, I phoned him to ask for your new one, and he was in the room with you. Oh my God.
Oh my God. Phones off.
What a fucking piece. What
go
a
again.
Piece.
That's about the show, yeah.
Do you know when you've been
I've
away,
got
that's not happened
I've got
once. That's not happened once. Anyway.
So sorry.
I was in the middle of an emotional story about me and MK. So, and you were in the room finishing the tapes.
Wow.
It was amazing. It was, I was really excited to think, oh my God, I'm going to get like one of the first.
That was maybe my flatmate at the time.
Oh, really?
A guy called Sheridan.
Right.
Yeah. And that was when I was living in West Kent Estate.
Yeah.
In, the mid-90s, probably.
Yeah. That's amazing.
Here's a little bit that we like to call, how did you get into hip-hop?
You are basically steeped in hip-hop. How did you get into it? How did it all start with you?
I got into hip-hop, I suppose, just from being a kid growing up in London.
Yeah.
So at those times, obviously, there's no internet. You had to kind of piece everything together. Mm. So I was just a normal kid, 8, 9 years old, listening to Radio 1, Capital, whatever my mum had on the radio, you know, and then slowly but surely I'd hear these examples of hip-hop, whether it be tunes like White Lines or like Shaka Khan, I Feel For You, and then there's DST scratching in the background.
Shaka Khan, let me tell you what you wanna do. Do you feel for me the way I feel for you? Shaka Khan, let me tell you what I wanna do. I wanna do every rocky.
Malcolm McLaren, Hobo Scratch, Buffalo Girls, tunes like that. And then in the area that I was living in at the time, which was Wembley and Easton in northwest London, I'd see like the odd piece going to school.
Mm.
And I'd just be thinking in my head, what the fuck is that?
Yeah.
Why has someone just drawn this really good like piece of art on a bridge?
Yeah.
You know, and then slowly pieced it all together. And then, by the time I was like 13, 14, I was like, really want to get decks. Got one deck. Just done really rubbish scratching on that for about 2 years. Messed up all of my vinyl because I didn't know about slip mats. And then when I was about 15 or 16, my mum was like, oh, all my family are Irish. My mum was like, oh, Mark, you know, I've got you these driving lessons, you know, for your birthday. And I was like, oh, man, I don't want driving lessons. Like, I've got enough money for one deck. Let me not have the driving lessons. Give me the money for
this. This is how
decks.
Dedicated you were to getting the decks.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You give up driving.
Yeah, of course. And then I got decks, and then that was it. And then I was too young to DJ in clubs because I was only 16.
Yeah.
And at that time, I had friends in America who were sending over mixtapes, radio show tapes, guys like Kid Capri.
Yeah. Mm. With the light skin brother DJ, Kid Capri, the chief rock star child, as we proceed to do it like
early doo-wop, early Ron G. And I was seeing these mixtapes that were coming over that just had the hottest shit.
Yeah.
And I was just like, no one's really doing this in the UK. So let me do this because this is a way to get heard, to get into clubs.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I started selling them in London in like 3 shops. Then that went to 10 shops. Then that went to about 30 shops in the UK. Then it went up to distribution deals in America, all over Europe, distribution in Australia, to the point where it was hitting literally all over the world.
Yeah.
Amazing.
So,
and how are you deciding? Because like when you do your first one, obviously there's not a lot of pressure because you're sort of, you're just thinking, I'm just going to put this out. But then as you started to get a reputation, you became the equivalent of a radio DJ in terms of like people are looking to you for what the next hot stuff, like in the UK.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Did you feel the pressure of that? Were you just trusting your own ears as to what you liked and
stuff? Yeah, I was just trusting my own ears. And again, it's kind of hard to put yourself back into those days with the technology and the things that were going around at that time. But I had no idea. Like, I had no idea who was listening to them, who was buying them, and the effect that that had. And even the artists that I'd put on, so say like Roots Maneuver, I met him in 94, 95, 96. I got him on a mixtape.
Yeah.
And there was a guy called Rodney P. And I was a huge London Posse fan. And I asked him to, will you come by the studio to spit on this tape? And he said, yes.
Amazing.
And I was like, oh my God, it's Rodney P. And next thing, you know, we're in the studio together for like 3 hours. We recorded loads of like specials for this mixtape. And then I just put it out.
Yeah.
And I did it all like in my bedroom with a tape deck and then a 4-track. And I'll just record it live.
Wicked.
And just have my mates, who were nobodies at the time.
Yeah.
You know, oh, there's a guy called Skinny Man. Right, let's get him on. There's a guy called Super T. There's a guy, you know. And then next thing, the scene started building up and I started to go out to more people and get more recognition.
And did it feel... Is it weird, isn't it? Because I guess you were big, but people don't know what you look like. So...
Yeah, yeah. Most people thought I was black.
Right, yeah.
What was your perception when you were buying the tapes? Did you have a picture in your head?
I think I'd seen a picture, or maybe you'd been in Hip Hop Connection or something, right. So I sort of knew what you looked like. But my recollection is of thinking that, because I used to buy loads of mixtapes, but you were the one that, like, you know, you were sort of the go to mixtape guy. So it was like we're waiting. I used to phone the guy up, your flatmate, and like
this is so funny.
Yeah, and I go,
this is so funny.
And I wouldn't, and I'd wait for your next one to come out. So it wouldn't be like, what have you got?
Right.
It'd be like, oh, MK's working on something. I go, all right, I'll hold fire until that comes. Okay. Yeah, it was like that. It was mad. Yeah, yeah, it was really. And then you'd get turned on to artists from listening to your tapes. Obviously, you've got access to stuff before anybody else has,
I guess.
And so like, you sort of inform the stuff I was buying, like the actual albums and stuff I was buying. So it's pretty mad. Do you know what I mean? It's, I guess you don't realise the impact that you're having. Do you know what I mean? So you did mixtapes and stuff, but then it sort of progressed from there, right? Because like, you're a show DJ as well, aren't
you? So started off doing the mixtapes, and then in 1995, there was a shop called Handspun Records.
Yeah.
Which was on Darblay Street in the West End, and I got asked to work there. And as you know, like an 18-year-old kid, 19-year-old kid, that's the dream job.
Yeah.
You know, it's records, that means discounts, that means, you know, you get to meet loads of like famous people who might come in. And,
yeah, yeah.
So from there, I worked in that shop for a year, and then we set up another shop called Deal Real in 1997. And then I was a partner in that. And then off the mixtapes, I just started traveling the world.
Yeah.
It was literally crazy. Like, I'd get a phone call, oh, we've got a gig in Paris, do you want to come out? I'd just be like, yeah, fine, come out in Paris, get paid, whatever, end up sleeping on somebody's floor. And then someone would go, oh, you know, there's another part if you want to DJ. I'd be like, all right, cool. And it's like a Janet Jackson after party. Oh, look, there's Kate Moss. I'm like 19, never even really left London.
Yeah,
I think we went to France on a school trip once. Next thing, I'm in this like plush Paris nightclub DJing to like Kate Moss and Janet Jackson.
Incredible.
And then, yeah, it just escalated.
Did you play what you wanted to play?
Always. And looking back, wasn't always the best idea. Yeah, let's play some underground hip-hop to a bunch of people who obviously don't want to hear that. But, then I was starting to DJ up and down the country. Then I'd had gotten like an agency. Then in 1997, me and Roots Maneuver got together and we were like, let's start doing some shows.
Yeah.
And originally that whole idea was, because no one knew who he was.
Yeah, yeah.
He had like two tunes out maybe. So I managed to get on an agency. And I said to the agency, look, I've got this guy called Roots Maneuver. When you book me, he's going to MC and do his little two tunes and MC for the set.
On the turntables we have DJ MK, Kilburn's finest. I bring you 10 ton girl to this homegrown rain. Bonify what you hear, tis the sound of pain. But the pain leads to gain. So we did not stagnate, we elevate to the next state. Motion divine, glisten like crystal.
And then we did a gig for like £50. We were really happy. Then the next gig was in Scotland. That was £100.
Yeah.
And then within 2 years, we were doing like Glastonbury. And then it just got silly. Like, Roots Maneuver obviously like blew up. And next thing I know, this is like 98. We're doing like 32 date US Canadian tours.
Fuck.
We're doing shows in front of like 2,000 people.
Yeah.
I made sure I'm like the set beforehand.
Yeah.
I'm starting to meet all my idols and heroes.
Yeah. Do you find it overwhelming or did you sort of went with
not
it
really. Mm. Not really. Mm.
How did it work? Because like obviously, you were originally doing that tour with Roots Maneuver. That started off as a DJ-led tour, and then Roots Maneuver's then getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
Yeah.
So did it gradually evolve to more of a rapper-like led thing, or how did you do it? How did you like, or did you suddenly start taking bookings both as MK with Roots Maneuver and also as Roots Maneuver?
All of those gigs up until 2002 were Roots Maneuver and DJ MK, and then by the time he got new management, who they're like, it's just got to be Roots Maneuver now. Who's this DJ MK guy? But that's the way it went. But yeah, for the first, I don't know. Like, I don't know, 5, maybe 10 shows, I'd do a set.
Yeah.
And then Rodney would just be on the stage somewhere, hyping it up quite badly. And then he'd do his tunes.
Yeah.
And then obviously he had an album out.
Yeah.
So then it was like, right, we have to promote this album as opposed to, you know, me doing an hour and a half set. And then it was like, okay, it's a 45-minute set, it's just tunes. And props to Rodney, because he's the first guy who really, there's a lot of talk now about, oh, you know, so many guys in the UK doing so many big things, which they are, but there's kind of like a history that's been written out where he was doing, a lot of big things.
How did the Americans take to him?
They loved it.
Yeah.
It was Ninja Tunes. So they were the first label who really had a group of young people between whatever, 15 and 35, who weren't just interested in what was going on in America.
Yeah.
Their ears were open to what was going on other places. And they loved it, and it was
his
amazing.
Accent must have blown their mind, right? Because he's like so British, like, you know, it's not like it must be like listening to a different form of music almost. You know what I mean, in terms of
you know, Americans are like, they don't understand anything.
They probably thought this guy's from Arkansas or something like that. Do you know what I mean? They can't even fathom that it's a British guy.
Yeah, I remember the first time we went to New York to do shows in like 98. I remember being in Brooklyn and New York in 98, especially in Brooklyn, was very different. Yeah. And people would just come up to us because they'd know we weren't, there wouldn't be a black guy and a white guy walking down the street.
Yeah.
And we probably looked a bit different as well. And they'd just be coming up to us. And me, he's like, yo, like, what are you guys doing here? Like, who are you? I'd be like, yeah, from London. oh my God, London, you know, the Queen. And yeah. It's just silly stuff like that.
Did you meet hip-hop artists out there and stuff when you did?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, loads. I mean, because we had the record shop as well, we'd have a lot of artists who'd come over. So, like, first time I met Nas was, like, 96. Wu-Tang Clan had come down to the shop. Big L, OC, loads of people.
And what was it? What were you like when you meet those people? Because, like...
Oh, I'd just try and be really cool and probably quite rude to them, all right?
Really defensive.
Yeah,
no reason.
Yeah. I remember Nas asking me, like, where he can buy blunts, and me going... Blunts. You're in England, mate. You want Rizzlers.
Not quite sure what your point is. Yeah.
For 50p rather than getting your blunts.
You know, yeah. And did they come and do spit verses and stuff?
Yeah. The first American I ever had on my mixtape was a guy called Mad Skills.
Yeah.
Who was just the sickest freestyler at the time, and he had an incredible album out.
Watch my style rise like stars on your eyes, and battling is hard like retards becoming Jedi's. Watch the dread drop, submerging from tracks, going from a verse with an eye in their back. So where you at when I choose?
And he came down to the store, remember Big Ted was there, and he just freestyled for like an hour. And yeah, he
would do that, right? Just like go off for ages and ages. Right?
He'd just come down, do it for free. Oh, I've never paid anyone for any freestyles.
Right? Really? Yeah.
Of course not. No, it's promotion, baby.
Yeah.
Promoting you. What?
And you also showed DJ for Dizzy Rascal, right?
Yeah.
How did
that come about? Yeah. That came about through a guy called DJ Semtex, who was his DJ at the time. He couldn't do some shows. This was in 2007. So then I did some shows for him. We all got on. And then there was more shows he couldn't do. And then by 2010, he just couldn't do them or whatever. Yeah. And then I took over.
Yeah.
I've been DJing for Dizzy since 2010.
I read an interview with you where you were talking about it was to an American magazine, I'm not sure, but
right.
You were saying that you sort of see all of that sort of what Dizzy was doing, what Dizzy is doing, and it's all part of sort of the hip hop umbrella. Is that do you sort of see it all as one thing, or do you?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I think like Dizzy doesn't get the recognition I think that he deserves when people talk about grime. Like, he's one of the guys who started it.
Yeah.
Like, before Wiley was making those rhythms, Dizzy was making those rhythms.
Yeah.
And in a recent interview with Wiley on, I think, DJ Vlad, he talks about it and he admits it, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, he was just making incredible, incredible music. And I think it all comes under the banner of hip-hop for me. I mean, some people might say, oh, garage or whatever. Yeah, that whole influence was there and that vibe. But to us, in the sort of UK hip-hop scene, I hate using that word.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of those sort of, like, garage MCs, it was like a joke to us. Because it was just a guy who was like, hey, come on, see me. You know, and it was just lyrics to hype up the party.
Yeah.
So if you went to a Twice as Nice rave, that was the guy in the mic and he was hyping it up. But I don't want to hear you make a tune, mate.
No.
Please don't. But come 99, 2000, you know, So Solid Crew. And I respected what they were doing.
Yeah.
But for MCs, I did not rate them whatsoever.
Yeah.
And then the whole grime thing started and I remember Fix Up Look Sharp.
Yeah.
And I was like, this guy Dizzy Rascal I've been hearing about. So this is grime. This ain't grime. This is Big Beat.
He's rapping over
Big Beat. This is a hip hop tune. And then someone played me I Love You.
Yeah.
And that just blew me away.
Yeah.
Mad. I was, what the fuck is this?
I know.
This is like some futuristic next bounce.
Yeah. If you don't know what you say, that's for. Some banging at your girl, what for? Pregnant, what are you talking about before? 15, she's underage, that's raw. And against law, 5 years or more. That she wants a score and a half of a draw. That's the kind of threat that you can't ignore. That you pin down to the floor. And I was just like, this is incredible. And then, you know, I did a little bit of research. I actually got booked to do a Wu-Tang gig. Hammersmith. Apollo,
yeah. Mm. And Wiley was doing warm-up. And yeah, that's the first time I saw Wiley live. And then I was like, okay, this grime thing's actually quite good. But then I always thought to myself, there's like 6 or 7 MCs who are incredible.
Yeah.
And the rest are just shouting and I don't really like it.
Yeah. It was I think like the MC got pushed to the fore more, didn't it? Like after that. Like, I think you're right, with the garage stuff, it was more like, it was like another instrument or something, wasn't it? It wasn't like you weren't listening to. If you put any scrutiny to the lyrics at all, you just think I can't. It doesn't even make sense. But like actually, like Dizzy, he had like sort of rap style punchlines, you know, old school like Tropicana and all that kind of stuff. Do you know what I mean? Like it was. But I agree with you. I Love You. When I first heard that, I just couldn't even understand what the fuck it was, man. It was like, it was mental.
But he was listening to, you know, hip-hop. He was listening to 3-6 Mafia. He was listening to Master P and those types of guys.
Because he had UGK on...
UGK,
on his tracks, right?
Yeah, like Bumby's like one of his best friends, even now. But at that time, when I first started hearing all that Southern rap, I hated it.
Right,
I couldn't stand it.
Yeah.
And then with Roots Maneuver, we had to do this ridiculous 33-date tour, and we went everywhere. We went to New Orleans.
Yeah.
We went to Louisiana and Mississippi, all these places. And when I was there, I kind of got it. Mm. I was like, well, it's fucking hot here.
Yeah.
You know, the vibe's different. The bounce of the music is different as opposed to New York, where it's quite like London.
Yeah.
It's more aggressive. And I kind of got it. And then, kind of became a fan of that music as well.
Yeah, it's really mad actually, because like when... I went to LA for like the first time last year.
Really?
Yeah, and I'd been to New York years and years ago, right? And like I got to like hang out with some hip hop fans, like guys that are really into it in LA. Mm. And when they were playing like Snoop and stuff like that in the car in LA, you suddenly go, like, I get it. Like totally, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This music in context, I mean, I liked it anyway, but suddenly it makes fucking more sense. And then you totally get why New York production and the music is how it is, because you go to New York, it's all claustrophobic and like all in around you, and then LA is much more just
spacious.
Exactly. You totally get like the hip hop is a product of the environment, isn't it?
Exactly. But same way with grime in London, right?
Yeah. But the Deep South stuff, everybody hated that over here when it first came out. Everybody's like, what the shit is this?
Yeah.
Because particularly because like the rapping was so shit on it as well. Do you know what I mean? Like Master P, man.
He wasn't that bad about it, really, was he?
Is he still going?
Unfortunately, yeah.
Is he? Wow.
He made a lot of money somehow.
Yeah. It was weird because like it's sort of like he was so big, but not here. I don't think. But you just hear about this guy that was like a monster in the States, and then he'd go, "Okay, I'll check it out." Yeah. And then you go, "What the fuck? This is shit! Yeah. Like proper shit."
But I think hip hop fans are the most loyal, most scrutinous bunch of people. And I think up to that time, myself included, everything where someone said, "Oh, you need to check this out," you know, this is really good. It normally was.
Yeah.
It's the first time you heard Nas. Mm. Check out Nas, he's amazing. Oh, he is amazing. But coming to the late 90s, like you were saying, you know, you'd start to hear about dudes who are selling loads of records, and normally that would mean you had skills and you were really good.
Yeah.
But in that case, to us, they weren't really that good.
No.
Yeah.
No. And then you're sort of thinking, is there something I'm not getting?
Exactly.
Here?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? You sort of go, I listen to it again, or maybe I'll smoke some weed. Yeah.
Is it me? Is it, am I just.
Yeah, it was bad. What stuff do you listen to now?
I listen to everything. I know that sounds really corny. Oh, you listen to everything.
Yeah.
But I do. Hip-hop wise, because I do the show on Kiss, and I've been on Kiss for 13 years, I have to listen to everything. So now, UK wise, like Avelino, AJ Tracy, Ocean Wisdom, dudes like that. And I think the whole UK hip-hop, grime, it's kind of just one thing now, because there's grime artists who are essentially rapping over kind of trap hip-hop beats as opposed to more traditional.
Well, Ocean Wisdom's an interesting one, because his flow is sort of different, isn't it?
Yeah.
And also the stuff he raps over is different, isn't it? I mean, Dirty Dark did all the production on that album, but there's loads of like... It's not crossover as such, but it takes a lot of influences from elsewhere, doesn't it? And it's a really exciting album now, isn't it?
Yeah, he's wicked. I really rate him.
Like it's new and exciting, but he properly respects being able to actually spit, doesn't? Do you know what I mean? It's amazing.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
And he's good.
Yeah, I know.
That's the best thing.
Yeah.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices
down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Oh, man. Hip-hop gripes.
Is there anything about hip-hop that you're not as keen on at all?
I think the state of lyrics. I think the balance of hip-hop has changed. And obviously with what the media push and what the record labels push, I think with 50 Cent, it all changed quite a bit.
You think that was a tipping point, eh?
Yeah, I think so. Because then from the relationship I'd have with record labels and talking to A&R people, it was kind of like, okay, this is the blueprint.
Yeah.
You know, which focused on a lot of negative stuff. Yeah, you know, sex and violence, like KRS-One said, you know, that's what sells, and it's always been that way. But I think that's when everything started to go, you know, we're only really going to show this side of hip-hop, which was the more sort of negative sort of side.
Yeah. And do you think that still has an effect now?
Yeah, totally. Totally. Yeah. I mean, you got to think about it. When we were 15, listening to hip-hop,
yeah,
how many record labels were there? It's literally hundreds.
Yeah.
You know, independents and even the majors. But now there's essentially three.
Yeah.
So everything that we hear that comes out on a major label, you're talking about is decided by maybe a group of 10 people.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
yeah,
those guys probably aren't into it as much as we are.
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, hip hop is the way it is. But I think on the other side of it, it's exciting. There's loads of good new music that's coming out. Some of the beats that are coming out are amazing. And because of the internet, it's just saturated, isn't it?
Yeah.
So it's quite hard.
Well, I think
to find.
Yeah, I think there's advantages and disadvantages to it. Like, you sort of think about something like Spotify, like.
Mm.
The problem with it is that you listen to music in a more disposable, like a throwaway way, do you know what I mean? But the advantage of it is that, say, for example, you're trying to discover some new stuff, you can very easily, if somebody said you should listen to this, you have to go and buy that thing. Mm. Whereas if somebody says, now you need to listen to this, I can literally click onto it and listen to it straight away,
yeah,
do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's like, and then on Spotify, it will give you related artists, yeah, and then you suddenly start looking, and then there's these playlists, like there's this alternative hip hop playlist that I've listened to at the moment on Spotify, and it's turned me on to so many people that I wouldn't have even heard of,
yeah,
do you know what I mean? And
yeah,
then suddenly you go into this like little rabbit hole, if you like, of going, oh, I like this,
yeah,
and then shit, that's good as well.
Never
and then
ends.
Basically, yeah, do you know what I mean? And so it is good for that, but the problem is, it's fucking so much of it, like you can't give it. You almost can't give it enough scrutiny, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. I think the sad reality is, I don't think music is as important to people now as it was, because it's more disposable.
Yeah.
Before, like you said, if you like something,
you hunt it down, the chase of it.
You'd have to hunt it down, but not only that, you'd have to pay for it.
Yeah.
And a 12 inch is in the 90s, was $6.99.
Yeah.
It's a lot of money. An album was 12 quid, 14 quid for an import, maybe.
That fucking 14, 15 quid for a CD. I mean, I remember, like, there was a scandal. I mean, I just think there's no way it can be worth this amount of money. Right. Do you know what I mean?
Cost them like 30p to produce or whatever. But.
Yeah, I think, like, it's the same way with everything. If you haven't paid for it, you don't invest in it.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
It's you know, just the same way, I mean, we all get stuff for free, you know?
Yeah.
And if I get, like, these trainers, thank you very much, Nike.
They're very nice.
Thank you very much. You know, I got these for free because, you know, I'm sponsored by Nike and I do work with Nike. So do I value these as much as if I paid 250 quid for them?
Yeah.
If you got a bit of dirt on them, maybe, like, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. So now we're in this world where, you know, stuff like Spotify exists, which, like you said, is amazing because you can get turned on to new artists and learn about new music. But at the same time, a lot of people are just doing that.
Yeah.
They're not then going and buying it because they don't have to.
Well, that's the thing, is that, like, before, if you want to listen to music, you have to buy it, right?
Yeah.
Whereas now, you have to choose to buy it, because I could listen to this album as many times as I want without having to pay for it.
Yeah.
So the only thing that's making me buy it is a sense of, I need to support that artist. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And the truth is, people don't fucking want to do it. Like, you're relying on people's honour.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And this is not going to happen. So, like, I remember saying to a mate, like, I normally, if I'm Spotify, I genuinely do this. If I see an album that I really like, I'll then go and buy that album, right?
Yeah.
But like, my mates are going to be, why the fuck would you do that? Yeah. Do you know what I mean? You don't need to. You can literally have it. Yeah. You've got it, mate. Just it whenever you want. So it is like the system is, there's a loophole, a massive loophole where you don't have to pay for it.
Well, we're in the Matrix now.
Yeah.
So nothing is real. So artists will send me their an MP3 or whatever, their tune, a link to their YouTube. It happened the other day. The worst tune.
Yeah.
I'll even try and find the link after this to play it to you. It's so bad. The guy's like got 70,000 hits.
Yeah.
And then 70,000, that's not right. And then you look at the comments. There's not one comment.
Yeah.
So obviously he just bought those views.
Yeah, oh, right.
So like everything, you know, you can manipulate, you know, perception's numbers
easy to change,
and perceptions. Yeah. And yeah, so we're in this kind of weird, digital, messy world where music's still there, outlets more than ever, music's more accessible than ever before, but people aren't really investing in it. And everyone's kind of an expert on everything now without knowing anything, which is a bit annoying.
Yeah.
So like now, like requests when you're DJing, it's just...
Oh, mate.
Do you have a standard response?
Mate, I need to get a T-shirt done going, I'll play you one Drake record. Like, you know.
Are you a Drake fan?
I like Drake. I think he makes some good tunes. He makes some, you know, some Drake tunes I really like. But for me, I always get the impression that I'm looking at an actor rapping.
Yeah.
And props to Drake, you know, he's a bit of a Skepta. He's just done a tune with Gigs, which is all amazing for the UK scene, but I just think he's begging it a bit, bro.
Yeah.
Like, he's got a Stone Island, like, gold chain. Yeah. It's like, come on, man.
It's very, it sort of feels quite manipulative, doesn't it, in terms of, like, what he's doing with, like, his story and how he's, like, that sort of emo side
started
of him.
From the bottom now, I'm here. No, you didn't, mate. You're a nice middle-class kid. You're a child actor in Degrassi Junior High from the age of 14. You're on good money for that.
Yeah.
And then I'm doing hip-hop.
Yeah. So you can't, but the thing is, you can't do, started quite high up.
Yeah, started in the middle ground.
Progressed a little bit.
And now I'm here.
And it would have been all right if that hadn't worked out. Yeah. Because I probably would have been fairly comfortable.
Exactly, yeah.
It's too long a hook, that. Yeah. I think Drake's a perfect example of, like, there are people, because people go on about how he's like a, you know, he can sing, he can rap.
I don't want to hear that.
Yeah.
That's an R&B artist.
Yeah.
And like for me, I don't even think he can't sing.
I know. It's not. It's sort of, you go, well, you can sing at a worse level than, like, if singing was all he was bringing to the table, he wouldn't have been signed. Do you know what I mean?
No.
So it's like an extra thing.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's like saying, I can play football,
I've got my foot in the
but
door,
I'm not
going
to go for just a football contract. Do you know what I mean?
It's true.
It's mad. Like, it's sort of, and also, I do think there are people that can sing and rap much better than Drake can. You know, like, there's artists out there that are not selling anywhere near the numbers that he is that can do that. So let's not pretend it's a unique thing. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, it's... it's a mad one.
But sometimes I think to myself, okay, so we're in 2017, like, you know, Drake is the biggest rapper right now. And I'm just thinking, that's quite sad.
Yeah.
Because the greatest rappers before that really were great.
Yeah.
And you're not great. You've made some, you've made some good tunes, you made some, you know, good sort of pop singing, R&B.
He's made some great singles, and I'm not a fan, but he's made some great, you know, you can... People like people and don't like people, but he's made some great singles that have done well.
Yeah,
he's not done a great album, has he? I mean, I've not heard.
No,
do you know what I mean? Like, he's got a few hits, but like, I just don't, I can't see it, to be honest with you. But There are people, I've got mates that are just upset, like, think he's brilliant, so you sort of think, okay, fine. Good, I won't talk to you anymore.
Yeah.
Good. Do you
I mean, I think he's still here, isn't he?
Yeah, he's here for like
shows
a
for like 2 years
and,
at the O2 or something.
Yeah. Oh shit, okay. Well, in that case, big fans of Drake.
Big fans of Drake.
If you could come down and podcast, yeah, you're more than welcome.
We're happy to come to you.
Yeah. What you're doing is truly unique, so I just want
to. And then he listens to the last 28 podcasts. Regular thing.
He's a regular listener.
Yeah. What do you think of like sort of trap and like the mumble rap and all that kind of stuff? Are you...
Okay, well, with trap, for me, trap is just dead press hip hop.
Yeah.
It's down south hip hop, you know, which Ludacris, which we've all kind of liked and enjoyed since the end of the 90s. I think there's another side of trap, which is the more club-based EDM side of it, where producers more from an EDM background will be involved with it. But yeah, I really like it. I play it in the clubs, not all of it, but yeah, a lot of it. And as for the mumble rap, I think just when we thought, okay, levels can't really go any lower.
Where is this going?
We're in a quite bad situation right now. Then it just got worse.
Yeah.
But there's a time and a place for that. And if you're an 8-year-old kid, a 10-year-old kid, that's going to be the best thing you've ever heard. But I'm not, we're not 10-year-old kids.
Yeah.
So it's not really, it doesn't really appeal to us. But yeah, some of those guys are just really terrible, man.
Yeah.
But then there's guys like Migos, and some of the tunes I like.
Yeah. Y'all rich nigga, rhyme run the city with the Mac ticket, chopping the chicken, and what's the ticket? Whipping
the breaking, and making the tucking, the nigga, they must admit, think I'm selling that midget. Nah, for real. Yeah. And then some of it, I'm just like, this is terrible.
I know.
It's just like the other tune.
It's a proper, like, lottery, isn't it? Where you think, I'm either going to really like this, and think in the car this would be quite good.
Yeah.
Or I'm going to think this is possibly the shittest thing ever, be depressed, and then not want to listen to music for a while, do you know what I mean?
But if you're 18 years old, and your example of hip-hop has been the last 10 years, what's the music you're going to make going to be like? It's going to be exactly like that.
Yeah.
Because you're not going to care about lyrics, you're not going to care about studying the culture, about the history of what you're doing.
Hip-hop is less reverential about its past than other genres, do you not think? Like with like rock bands and stuff like that, they really do, and the fans, they're always keen to go back and listen to the lineage of it in a way that it feels like... I don't know if it's because hip-hop's more changeable, but it feels like hip-hop fans that listen to it now, they won't automatically go back to, like, the pioneers or people before necessarily. Some people do, but it feels like they just listen to what's now, don't they? Do you think that's the difference? I mean, it feels like it.
For me, it seems like it's more about fashion, it's more about what's hot as opposed to actually liking it.
So
I think the majority of people who go to a Kanye West show, the majority of people who went to Drake at the O2, they're just more happy to be there because they're Snapchatting they're on an InstaVid or whatever. If you're a girl, they're just parenting. But if you actually ask them, so what's your favourite tune, what's your favourite album from this artist, they probably won't know. You know, because it's not that important to them.
There are people that listen to hip-hop now that don't realise that Primo's a legend. Do you know what I mean? Like that is a mind-blower, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? Like,
well, when you were talking about, like, the mumble rap thing, like, I've seen guys, like, I think it was a guy called Lil Uzi Vert, and he was on Hot 97, and they gave him, like, a Primo beat to rhyme over, and he just couldn't do it. And he was just like, I don't want this old shit. But if you think of it, you know, we're here going, come on, man, Primo.
Yeah.
Like the Don producer. He is hip hop. And you can't rhyme over a Primo beat. But then if you flip it and think, okay, if this was 1995 and Primo and Gangstar were up at Hot 97 and they were giving him an early hip hop record from 90, you know, the instrumental to Curtis Blow, The Breaks. Where it's no sampling. It's live musicians. They're going to be like, Guru would be like, I ain't rhyming over this old shit. Right?
That's true.
That you know, such a,
So there's kind of two ways of thinking about that. But then if you're a good MC, you should be able to rhyme over anything.
Yeah.
You know? So.
But I think the biggest change for me the thing that I can't get on board with is that the art of MCing, which is always heralded as like the, you've got to get that right before you do anything, right?
Yeah.
And you could get like if you get spotted on any video or any live show where you fuck it up, it's the end of your career almost. Yeah. I mean, you've got to come, like, it's going to be difficult to come back from that.
Yeah.
That's gone now. That is disappeared. Like, it doesn't matter anymore, I don't think.
No,
you know,
it doesn't.
People aren't even trying to be the best rapper or anything. Like, you know, that's just not a thing.
No. I mean, but that's the times we're in, and it doesn't matter really. It doesn't matter how good you are. It's more important to have, you know, your social media popping.
Yeah, yeah.
It's more important for you to have your YouTube videos out there. It's more, you know, which you know, when you think about it, is crazy. But unfortunately, that's now the world we're in.
Yeah.
So a lot of these guys are just making tunes and trying to, I suppose, just get lucky.
Yeah. Mm.
But my thing is, I don't want to hear another tune about what guns you have or don't have. I don't want to hear about, you know, what you're cooking in the kitchen. And I think the sort of normalisation of lyrical content in hip-hop now, you know, it's like, what was that tune where he's just basically just talking about cooking up crack? It's like really big commercial tune. And that's a song about cooking up crack.
Yeah.
And you've got your girlfriend helping you cook
crack. That's,
That's not cool.
Yeah.
That's not good. But yet that's being played on Capital Radio at 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah.
With the swear words taken out.
Yeah.
I'm in love with the coco. I got it for the lolo. I'm in love with the coco.
Yeah.
Now, what world are we living in?
I know. And you sort of think it's got, actually, the content has got sort of worse in terms of like how offensive, or not offensive, but you know, misogynistic or whatever. Yeah. But
I'm in love with the cocoa.
That's but it's less controversial than it was, do you know, before. Yeah, so like before, hip hop was getting banned from radio and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But what they were saying then, I mean, obviously times move on and your barriers move and taboos disappear or whatever.
Yeah.
But it does feel a bit backwards, man. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, but like you said, I do think the counter argument always is that stuff is not for us. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's sort of
because
like you said, I used to listen to hip hop, and like there's always the accusation. It's just people shouting over stolen records and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And like you'd be like, no, fuck you, man.
Yeah, yeah.
That's You're in a situation where hip hop has been your life, like your career.
Yeah.
Do you ever? Like, when you see hip-hop moving in different directions, do you ever get personally nervous or worried that you're a representative of it, or you're responding to it in your career and you're sort of at the mercy of where it goes a little bit? Or do you think we'll always have a core of good stuff that you're always going to be able to go to?
I think if you're a DJ, if the music changes and it's not good, then you're not going to want to play it.
Yeah.
You know, but then there's new music that comes out where it's very easy to go, oh, this is shit, I don't like it. But then you have to listen to it, you have to study it, whether it be grime or whether it be like what we were talking about when we first heard like music from down south and stuff like that. But yeah, there are tunes that come out that are huge, and I'll be like, I'm never going to play this record.
Because it's
like that I'm in love with the Coco tune.
Yeah.
I've never played that tune. I ask for it in clubs all the time.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, this is shit. I didn't, you know, spend 10 years like practicing in my bedroom every day to go to a club to play I'm in love with the Coco.
Yeah.
You know, if that's what being a hip hop DJ is about, I don't want in.
Yeah.
But luckily, because I've been doing it since I was 16, a very young age, and I'm not coming into the game now or in the last 10 years, I'm kind of known, so I get opportunities to do cool stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and kind of play what I like. And because I still keep up with new music, it won't just be, I don't just play 90s hip hop. I'll still play new tunes, but new tunes that I like as opposed to just what's
And you still think there's, because everyone's always banging on about hip hop being dead or whatever, it's not as good as it used to be, but you still think there's enough good shit coming out, yeah?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, again, there's two ways you could look at that. You know, if we're here in this room and we make a tune, is hip hop dead? No, hip hop isn't dead,
because
we just created a tune. But is hip hop dead compared to what it used to be? Yeah, of course it is.
Yeah,
I'd say it is.
Yeah.
You know, lyricism.
Yeah.
You know, amazing production. People don't give a shit.
Yeah.
You know, they give a shit a little bit.
Yeah.
But the majority of people who give a shit are people our age.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, there's a small percentage of young people who, through Spotify and stuff like that, they know and love Tropical Quest, Gangstar, and all those guys. Mm. And, you know, then they listen to other things and stuff. So, yeah, it's interesting times.
Yeah.
Plug one, plug two, guest plugs for you.
Listen, we're nearly out of time, but I just want to ask you, what are you up to at the moment? That we is there anything that you're doing that we need to? This podcast gets, I can't even tell you the reach on this podcast, mate.
It's like 17 billion.
Yeah, something like that.
Start charging for these plugs.
Yeah, we should do. Yeah. No, what are you up to at the moment?
I've got a lot of gigs on coming up to. I'm going to India for some gigs, a little holiday.
Is there a hip hop scene in India?
Yeah. I think the music scene in India, with festivals and stuff, especially in the last 3 to 5 years, that's a whole new market.
Yeah.
So, say like 10 years ago, the new market was like Dubai.
And
the Middle East and places like that. But India's.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So, doing that, I've got a lot of production coming out. Do two shows. I do Kiss. I do a show in Kistery. Touring with Dizzy. Festivals, stuff like that. That's about it.
Cool. Well, listen, thank you so much for coming on, man. It's been
thank
a real honour.
Thank you for having me, man. It's a pleasure.
Rupert, you got anything to add?
Well, I just say goodbye, I guess.
Okay, cool. Bye.
Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.